Welcome to the ITM Podcast.
This is episode 195 of the ITM Podcast, the official Red Sox podcast of CLNS Media, brought to you by Rise Picks. We've got a sweep on our hands. Scott, baseball might not be for the Oakland A's.
No, I don't know what they would excel at, but I tend to agree that wasn't their best showing.
I was going through a list of things. I was like, maybe we can, you know, we can sit and think, like, what would they be better at? I can't say they showed much promise in general about much.
No, but, you know, I think, you know, they have speed, athleticism, maybe that'll help, but it's not the skill component, the mental, maybe something that doesn't require a lot of like mental fortitude, knowing where the ball's supposed to go, you know, kind of locking in somewhere you can kind of like not totally pay attention.
Podcasting.
No, that's way harder than baseball. I don't know what you're talking about.
It's right up there as hard, but holy shit, what a catastrophe. Mainly the first game. The other two, in case you missed these games, in case you're just tuning in to a podcast about some games that you didn't watch and want a recap, I always feel like I need to recap the things that happened, but also feel stupid because like there's no way anybody is tuning into the show to be like, all right, what happened with the Red Sox this weekend? Like, you probably watched. But that first game, my goodness. It got embarrassing so fast. It devolved from a baseball game into a literal shit show in a matter of minutes. Four errors in the first six outs. I'm amazed that there were only four. It actually felt like it was every single play. Like I said, it wasn't even baseball by like the third inning.
It was fun. That was the best part of the series. And then game three, we won. That's awesome. That game stunk. That was so slow. And it got fun at the end, you know, a one run game where we're almost blowing it. Like that brought it back a little bit, but yeah, nothing happened in the third game. And the second game, honestly, kind of a little slow too, again, until the end there.
Well, I think they spoiled us. I think the first game was just such an
offensive. First 20 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Like I wanted that. I wanted to walk away from that series like with a 27-0 aggregate. That's what I wanted. And listen, I'll take a sweep. I'll take any sweep. They look the same.
Hand one to me. Yeah.
Just yeah, I guess. But the thing is, I already knew I was getting a sweep. So it's like, I don't know. I could have dealt with a funner sweep. One thing people are not talking about, Scott, is that there were four errors in those first five outs, right? Five errors in the first three innings of game one. No errors for the Oakland A's the rest of the series.
I did not know that. That's
zero.
That feels wrong. But I guess, I mean, maybe they played clean ball and they just, you know, we weren't putting the ball in play a lot, to be fair. So that might be it as well.
That's another part of this too. It became, I don't know. There was more attention called to how slow the offense was because of how fun those first 20 minutes were. Minus Trevor Story. Trevor Story getting going. How about that? That's something if you're looking for an offensive something to point at. Jaron Duran doing the same thing. But yeah, no, noticeably slower in terms of just play. This was, as we have just found out this morning, as we are recording this, this was the final series the Red Sox will ever play at the Oakland Coliseum. Did you appreciate that in the moment? Were you like, God damn, this might be the last time that I see these in-person bullpens, that I see these railing-less dugouts, that I see guys in the bullpen sitting on chairs with their knees to their chin? Did you appreciate that?
Yeah, I mean, of course, I think anytime you go to Oco, you got to, you know, kind of walk around that last game virtually from your TV at home and say, man, this might be it. You know, I think it's just one of those special things. It's like, when you end a season in a contract year and you're like, this could be it. You know, I better walk around the park one more time. I think every time you go to Oakland, you just want to appreciate it just in case, you know, just because it's so special.
I mean, you might want to appreciate it just in case it falls to the literal ground. There's a chance that any game could be the last game there.
I think it's a beautiful pitcher-friendly ballpark.
You know what's so funny? Did you see the I think it was like a staff guide, like I don't know what you'd call it.
Oh yeah. The picture of like the don't say Oakland basically. And yeah. I guess they might have known this was coming, Joey. I don't know. Call me crazy.
Yeah, it seems like they did know it was coming. But like they also there was a whole list of things on there of just, you know, how to interact with the fans and whatever, just stuff for people who work in the pro shops and concessions and all that, probably from like some staff meeting that morning. Attendance was at 3,500 for that game, which, I mean, we all joke about the Oakland A's and whatever. I mean, Jack Edwards, the Bruins play-by-play announcer, for game, I think it was game one of this series, for no fucking reason at all, just decided to take a shot at Oakland. More people right now, I'm sure, are watching on the NESN 360 app than are in attendance in Oakland. It's like, why do we need to do that? Like, cool. But like, I don't know if they did anything to totally deserve that. But to see the number 3,500 was stunning, dude. Stunning. That's like a graduating class at a big high school.
That was, they were prepared for it too, because it was like the reason why that was there was because there was some, like, if there's less than 5,000 people, you don't got to open this gate or you can shut this gate or something like that. And it's like for the 5,000 to be the number where it's like, yeah, like we, like that happens a lot where it's like we have less than, like we have to have a plan in place for less than 5,000 people. And then they were right by a lot. They didn't even come close to sniffing 5,000 people.
No, they barely hit the halfway mark.
Yeah, that's not good, Joey.
We were just looking at their new home, which, in case you don't know, is going to be in Sacramento. They're going to be the Sacramento Athletics for 2, maybe 3 years, or 3, maybe 4 years.
They got a player option in there.
Yeah, I think there's a mutual vesting option. If they fill 5,000 seats more than once, their option kicks in. I want to get the name right of the ballpark here. They are going to be playing at Sutter Health Park in Sacramento, California, which holds just over 10,000 seats, but with grass outfield seats coming into play, they will increase the capacity to 14,000. And when I saw that, I was like, that's so embarrassing, you know, that to have 10,000 seats. But as we're sitting here talking about, dude, they don't fucking need 10,000 seats. Why would they need 10,000? When was the last time there were 10,000 fans other than the reverse boycott day?
Yeah, it's been a couple of years, and it's only because they're, like you said, they're boycott, except for that one day, they're actively boycotting the stadium. And now you're moving, so you're going to be further away from your base audience. So I don't think that's going to increase attendance. And you also like just officially spit in their face. Like, you've been doing it for 2 years, but now it's like we're actually like we left. So I don't think that's going to help matters. The only thing that stinks is like if you're an A's fan right now, you're in this thing of like, I like this team a lot. I love the players, all that stuff. And now I can't go because I have to take like a stand because of some greater cause. Mm-hmm. Dude, we're watching sports. Like, I get that you don't want to help the owner, and I don't even disagree with what they're doing, but it's like, if that was like the Red Sox, like if we just, you know, dropped our payroll to, you know, 80 million and it was like, nope, we're not going to Fenway anymore, I'd be like, this blows. Activism, that's what we're doing? Oh, man, I just kind of want to watch the Sox game.
Do I have to be involved? Like, am I a bad guy if I'm not involved? Like, I still want to go to the game. Here's the thing. It's like, I think up to this point, like you had to partake because, you know, fuck the owners and all that. Now it's like, okay, this is actually the last season here. I think there's like a forgiveness window to be like, guys, it's the last year. Like, I have to go, you know?
I do think there has to be. At least it might not be till like September, but, you know, I'm sure that last series will be packed.
They won't be able to show the crowd at all, dude. Like, the signs,
you can't do that.
not happy.
You're right. No, that's true. They're gonna keep tight camera. Even dude, the people behind, like directly behind the plate, that's dangerous. I don't even know how you broadcast this game.
Yeah, that's gonna be something. It might honestly start tomorrow. It would be sick if they sold it. No, it wouldn't. I was gonna say it would be sick if they sold it out just the rest of the year. No, it wouldn't be sick because that's a lot of money in a guy's pocket who has proven himself to be a big old steamy piece of shit. The other thing about getting fans in the building that I didn't think of till right now is you're not going to get Sacramento fans. Like, I get they don't have a baseball team, so like it's an open market, I guess. But one, it's a market nobody has talked about. Nobody's been like, Sacramento needs a baseball team.
Yeah, nobody wants it.
Nobody. But like, you're also telling them we're there for 3 years, 4 years max. Like, why the hell would I get invested in a team that's going to be, I don't know how far Vegas is from there, 500 miles plus, to be like, you guys are going to move in another 3-4 years. Like, why? Who's going to buy a Sacramento A's jersey?
Do you think they changed the name temporarily?
That's the thing. It's like, I got to look this up. How close is Sacramento and Oakland? I don't think they're close at all.
You can't be like, I mean, I guess the Commanders, Washington Commanders did it, but I mean, having a plan in place for like 3 to 4 years and then you again change. And then you're also running into the issue where Vegas doesn't really want you there. So it might be permanent. Maybe it is Sacramento. That part is very confusing to me because Vegas is like, we think you should stay.
The Vegas thing is weird because I think like at face value, it looks like they're telling them don't come here. But I think what's really going on there is it's just money moves. I think they're like
negotiating.
Yeah. So because I think they wanted something on the strip and then Vegas offered them funding for a stadium like near the highway. And then they were like, fuck your stadium by the highway. So I think it's that. I think they're just doing that. I think they ultimately end up there. But again, who the fuck am I? Oakland to Sacramento is an hour and a half away. I didn't realize that. I mean, California is so big. I assume that everything is, you know, so far apart from each other. I didn't realize they were that close. So it would be pretty dumb of them to like change their name to the Sacramento A's for 3 years. Like, think of all the legal shit. Like, they don't pay anybody anyway. Like, they're going to pay lawyers to come in and change their name now.
They wouldn't even be the only California team just misplaced right now. I mean, we're about to play another team with just the wrong name.
They're named after their county. So maybe that's what Oakland should do. Maybe they should just be like the West of the Rockies Athletics.
West of Rockies Athletics. That just rolls off the tongue.
WOR, the War Athletics.
Do you think the Rockies would get confused? But that could be a problem, maybe.
You know what? I think there is a lot of similarities in the franchises for sure. So
yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Maybe they just merged.
Honestly, they could.
Is that what you're going
to be onto something? You might be onto something right there. They should merge fan bases at the very least.
I don't know how much better they would get if you just combine talent pools.
Yeah. That's the thing is like, you don't make any individual player like twice as good. You just make them play with other people who aren't good at the game.
Yeah, and there's no one like, oh, well, like they have, you know, it's not like the A's are like, okay, they have six really good players and the Rockies have five. And if you throw them together, that's a pretty decent. It's like, no, you still, I don't really know how much different that would make either team. Nolan Jones on the A's would improve, I guess. And maybe you combine him with Brent Rooker, who maybe could be good if he plays like he was last year and your outfield's okay. But
Chris Bryant's still out there, dude. I know people forget about that. Chris Bryant's still out there.
Yeah, he is. I don't know if he has a hit yet, but he's out there. He didn't have one for up until like a day or two ago. I'm not sure what he's done recently, but he's not Chris Bryant anymore.
No, that's sad. I was thinking about it earlier. It's so funny. It's just he's stranded out there. That poor guy. Speaking of stranded out there, we got breaking news. I think this is the first time we've got breaking news on the show.
Yeah.
Per John Heyman. Jackie Bradley Jr., old friend. Signs with, take a guess.
Is it the Oakland A's?
Very close. It's the Long Island Ducks. So shout out to Jackie. Shout out to the Ducks.
You know what? sucks is I was going to say the New York Mets, and then it made when you said, "Wait, that would have been really, really close." But then you said, "You know, take a guess," and that made me think that it was one of the teams we were just talking about there. But he threw me off. I still would have been wrong, but it would have been that would have been better.
I know you, dude. You probably would have guessed the Ducks at some point. The Long Island.
That was my second guess. That's tough, man. Yeah. I think he still probably won't hit that well, but. God, he will be good defensively over there, I'm sure.
I think he's 39. So, I mean, I'm making that up. How old actually is Jackie Bradley Jr.?
Can't be that old. 35. No. 34.
33?
Okay.
What?
I can see that. I mean.
That's crazy. Wow. Okay. I didn't realize Jackie was that young. That is crazy. All right. Anyway. These Oakland A's. Should we talk about this series?
I kind of feel like we covered it, you know? It was just like those three innings were awesome.
That was,
game two was interesting.
I mean, I guess. Here's the thing about games two and three that, like, I think people care about more than anything is that Kenley pitched A. And that Kenley pitched not great. Typical Kenley fashion, it's like he got out of it. He got, you know, the line at first glance is like, oh, he didn't allow any runs. He pitched two innings. He racked up four walks. And if you're not paying attention to the Boston Red Sox, I'll tell you that's a majority of the walks they've allowed this year in those.
Yeah, but he
innings.
Said he was done doing that. Remember? He had a quote.
Did he?
Like,
he say that?
He said something like, spring training's over. I'm not walking batters anymore. I don't know why he. Like, he said something like, spring training's over for me, as in, like, because he didn't get the full spring training, and he just vowed to stop walking people. But I would argue...
No,
after, like, the post-game press conference from yesterday.
Oh, okay.
He
after
was
the
like,
second
just,
time he walked two
yes,
guys in the
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, he okay, said, okay. Spring training's over for me. I can try and get the actual quote. But he basically just said, like, spring training's over for me. Like, I'm not going to do that anymore. My problem with that, though, is that him throwing that 89-mile-per-hour putts in the zone is not going to be a better result than outside of the zone. I think it's great that he has movement. It's the only silver lining you have, but 97 when he opened last year and it had movement, gonna do a lot more damage than 89 with movement when we play a team that has nine actual MLB players on
Dude,
in
there
the
was
lineup.
A pitch. There was a pitch that he threw. I was on the phone and I was talking about something that was not the game. And I'm pretty good, I think, at like compartmentalizing and being able to have a conversation and you know, keep my reactions to a minimum and just like, you know, not give away that I'm watching a baseball game while I'm talking to somebody. And there was a pitch he threw. Nothing even happened. I think it was fouled off. But it made me like interrupt on the phone, like, oh, it's like Kenley, what was it? It was 89 just down the dick. It was the flattest, I think, cutter. I guess you could call it.
That's all he has right now. Unless it was,
yeah,
that's too hard for a slider. So, yeah.
I'll tell you this, Scott, it was not a slider. It was not a slider. I guess it was his cutter. And, man, thank God it was against the A's. Here's the thing with Kenley. Here's the thing, dude. Like, I'm certainly in a minority here. But I partook in it a bit too. So there's like a little hypocritical of me. I think if a guy says he's not feeling physically capable of pitching, you just take that for what it is. You just take it at face value. And I felt like the Kenley stuff maybe got taken a little far. Like, I was upset about it, especially with how much he was bitching coming into the year about the team and, like, whatever. But, like, so were we. And, like, I felt like he stood with us. I don't want to, like, throw that in his face now that, like, because he complained, that means he can't get hurt. And he is an old man. And, like, I think it is possible to just, I don't know, sleep on your back wrong and just not feel it. And I think that it's pretty evident that he wasn't lying. He's throwing 89 miles an hour. But I think that there probably is something wrong with his back. Like, not to compare these two guys in any capacity other than they wore the same jersey. But Like, I remember many times Manny sitting out because, like, he had a tummy ache, he had a toothache, you know, he had a knot in his hair. Like, there was just reasons that he sat out. And, like, obviously, you give a guy more leeway when they're Manny Ramirez, but I don't know. I think that's just part of the game. And, like, we also don't know if the Bailey approach and the Breslow approach is, if you feel anything, if you feel a tingle, don't, you know, it might've been what, if that is the case, it might've been what kept Giolito's injury from being a lot worse than it was. And it might be like the whole thing right now, or Kenley's like, you know, fuck you guys. I don't want to play. This team sucks. But I don't know. I find that harder to believe, especially after he comes out and like tosses 89 and looks like dog shit.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree with you. I think the bigger concern though is that if he does tweak his, you know, have a little low back strain, is he going to lose 7 miles per hour on his fastball? Because that's going to happen over 162 game season. I don't know what you mean. I think this is going to be one of those things. We saw it with like Matt Barnes. We've seen it with other people. Like Sale was a big one where it's like every single day you watch the first three pitches and you're like, could be 89, could be 97. And you're just like, which one are we getting today? And I call me crazy. I went into a one run game in the ninth inning. I don't love that be the guy that we just go, all right, let's just see if he has it. Like it could be anything. We don't know. Yeah. And also that 97 might not have the best control right now. So let's just have some fun. Let's make this inning more interesting than it needs to be.
For who Kenley is across his career, and even in his time with the Red Sox, like he was our sole all-star last year, for who Kenley is and what his prestige is and the fact that he is Cooperstown bound and holds records and is chasing more records, it's crazy how not confident I feel when he comes in against the Oakland A's. Like seeing him on the mound both times, I was like, oh my God, dude. Okay, please, man. Please, not today. And like I went to put money on the A's. And like in game three, I was like, dude, like this might be a worthwhile bet right now. Like I could see this happening. And you shouldn't feel that way. And I don't think that that's just injury related. I think you're right. That like I think it's probably more age. I don't know. It is weird though that like Bailey came in and not to give him like all the credit in the world, but it seems like it's working for everyone else. Everybody. Everybody who isn't named Joely, like it's working for. And just, I don't know, something's not clicking with Kenley. I don't know. I felt bad. Yeah, hit me.
If we either, you know, whether it's injury list, fall out of favor, whatever. And let's say they want to keep Chris Martin in the role he's in. Who would you want to be taking the mound in the ninth with this current bullpen?
Bearclaw.
Good answer. Yeah.
Who would I want in the ninth? God, do you have an answer?
I have a pretty crazy answer when you look at the bullpen. I feel like the guy that might make the most sense right now is Slayton, which is,
dude, I was thinking Slayton, but like, I didn't want to say it because
I mean, he's literally a Rule 5 guy. He's pitched like three times in the majors. One of those was, you know, one pitch we lose, but I don't like Weissert feels like a setup guy to me. Mm-hmm. I don't see him as a closer with that arsenal. Slayton has the hardest fastball on the team right now. And I'm trying to think of like Campbell could be in that discussion too, but again, feels like I don't know. Just I feel like of those three, he's the most logical choice.
What does Slayton top out at?
It's I mean, he only has three appearances, but
he topped out at 96.3. That's his average.
I was gonna say I think he can hit 98 plus. He's probably hit 98. I know that in spring training, they gunned everybody, and he had the hardest fastball in the entire big league group.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, is there a better option? I don't necessarily know, but especially with Hauke and Whitlock both being in the roles that they're in, which obviously is working right now, but those would both be the guys that I would think, or more so Hauke than Whitlock. But Slayton's not a crazy answer. I don't hate that at all.
He's reached 99.
There we go.
Yeah, not in the big leagues yet because he's only played three times, but like that's his top, I guess. The last game he reached 96.8 was not the last, 3 days ago on 15 pitches. Yeah. And he threw, more importantly, retired seven batters in 15 pitches. I will say his strikeout, he isn't getting a ton of strikeouts early on. Again, it's not even a sample size you can talk about, but
no.
He throws strikes and he throws hard and he just looks, when I see him, he just looks like a closer in waiting.
He looks like somebody to me. I forget who it was, but I have to like look at a picture of him right now to remember, but I saw him coming into the game and I was like, holy shit, he looks just like blank. Was it? Oh, dude, I think it was Drew Pomeranz is who I was thinking when I saw him.
Oh, no, I hate to hear that.
Doesn't he?
Yeah, I can see that.
It's like his head, his chin.
His facial hair type. Is interesting.
Yeah, I think it's that too. Like, Big Smooth had that same thing to him.
Yeah, pretty. Where, like,
he wanted to have the mustache with the beard.
Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt about it. No way around it.
But
that's just the truth.
Gas equals, nope, mass equals gas, and it's all in his cheeks.
Gas equals mass, baby.
That's not right. But yeah, I think it's, I don't know, I kind of wouldn't, like, life on the line, I almost would rather you draw it up something along the lines of Weissert, Campbell, Martin, Slayton versus Kenley. Like, if we need it, I don't want Kenley in that four.
Is Hendricks ruled out entirely for the year? Is there any chance that he comes back later in the year?
He wants to come back in the second half. I think I want to say he said something like July, like post All-Star break. But you know what these timelines, they always come in hoping for June, July, and end up with maybe an appearance in September or not at all. So, yeah, he does think he can. I guess it's going pretty well. He was already, like, throwing in, like, early spring training. I remember being like, well, that feels like he shouldn't be that far away. But,
and he's traveling with the team, which is, I don't know, means something to me. You know,
I agree. No, because he's not, like, that far.
It doesn't mean they can slot him in tomorrow. But the fact that they want him to be around the guys this year says to me, like, they have some belief that he'll come back. And I don't think you can assume anything about the team just because they're showing us right now every night that, like, you, all of your expectations were wrong. So maybe a changed medical staff changes the timeline of guys. Maybe that, you know, June, July return, like, actually happens. And even last year, like, somebody like Story, like, he did come back early. So it's not impossible.
Hendricks has a target of getting back by the trade deadline, according to Jen McCaffrey.
Which is pretty eerie, dude, because that's right around the time that I feel like Kenley's going to stop pitching.
Do you think he's going to make it to the trade deadline?
I think
or Kenley's going to stop. He's going to stop pitching for us.
Yeah. He'd stop pitching for the Red Sox, yeah. I have this weird feeling that it's going to be right around the trade deadline that he stops.
The Phillies. He's going to the Phillies.
I would really like that, honestly. I would like to see him contend and whatever and go out. I don't know. I can picture it. That's an easy thing to picture.
I don't know why. That's what the uniform that makes the most sense to me.
Yeah. Like, trying to picture him, like, with the Marlins is pretty ugly. Like the
Dodgers or something. I can't picture that.
Ew. Can you imagine Kenley Jansen, the Dodger? Just sounds wrong. Do you remember how we felt about Kenley Jansen in, like, 2018? Like, that we were, like, the one team that just had his number.
Always had weird quirks. Like the one thing I always remember with him is he couldn't pitch when there was a guy on second because he was so afraid of sign stealing. And that was before the Astros stuff. He just was scared of sign. Now, Maybe he was just privy to what the Astros were doing before the world was, because there was a couple of years there where it was like, it really feels like they know what I'm about to throw here. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah,
and they lost the
yeah.
World Series because of it. So maybe he's not as crazy as we thought. But I remember in the moment being like, this guy literally freaks out. He's a closer and he has no mental fortitude when there's someone on base. He would let them, he would balk to let them go to third because he doesn't want them to like literally sack fly away because he was so scared that someone was going to say that he's going to throw a cutter every time, which he does anyway. So I don't know what they were afraid of.
But the thing too, is like, you got two pitches, brother. Switch it up, you know, learn a change
up and like four times a year. And then everything else, it's 90% cutter and then an occasional slider.
Oh shit. He definitely knew that cutter was coming. We got to investigate this.
That's six so funny. In a row, dude, but they're probably
cheating. Think him throwing from the stretch in general in years past, like, I think he was super uncomfortable throwing from the stretch because he had that crazy windup. Remember, like, when he came here, you know, they implemented the pitch clock and like the changed balk rules. So he had to rework his entire delivery, which I think is something that we like just glossed over. Like, in the moment we cared about it, but like since then, it's like, it hasn't crossed my mind at least. But that was a major thing for him, that he had to entirely rework his delivery. It's weird. Kenley has taken a journey, man.
I thought about it yesterday because it looked like he was really laboring, which was strange. I remember he was 18 pitches in, and I remember just being like, dude looks tired, which is crazy to me. Because pitching, I never pitched with a pitch clock, but I always pitch fast. It doesn't take a lot out of you. And again, I wasn't throwing 90, but I was trying just as hard as he was when he was throwing 90. Yeah. 18 pitches is not a lot. For a closer, it's up there, but he just looked and maybe I'm just tripping. And he always, like I said, he always looks tired. He always looks annoyed.
That's the thing.
Like he's just, he's got his limbs going in different places every time. He's just a weird, I don't know, weird guy.
I mean, he's a big boy, dude. There's no getting around it. He's a big fella.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, mass equals gas. You don't, you know, no small guy is getting up there and tossing 89, dude. You got to really put some weight behind it. And I guess it's tough, especially honestly, this is earnest. And if you do that for 15 years, you can dick around, do a little shimmy shake before every pitch. And then suddenly, like in your elder, quote unquote, baseball years, like it is a big change. I don't know. I do understand that. But yeah, I mean, confidence level in Kenley, probably an all-time low for Red Sox fans. I do not blame them, but two saves.
He
pitched the ninth and then went into extras.
Right, okay. Who got that save?
Wink, I think.
He did come in late.
I think Winkowski got the 10th.
I think he did too. I remember him coming in and being like, he's our guy for the rest of the game. But yeah, I think I trust Kenley, and this might be an overreaction. I don't know. It's mostly due to the 89. And I mean, if you throw 89 and you're inaccurate, I don't trust you a ton. I think I trust him less than anyone after the way, and we can get into this, but Chase Anderson, that was awesome. No pressure, but he did what he had to do, which was not do what happened last year, which is you put in Caleb Ort up 9 and all of a sudden you get a save situation in 15 minutes and he's able to just let him rest. Because like were like, that's, you got to give him credit for that because he was able to just rest. Like we used Houck and Anderson for a whole game and just reset the bullpen, which was huge because the next day we needed 11 innings and we used just about everybody. So the fact that he was able to just do his job was so helpful.
Chase Anderson has thrown 40 pitches with the Boston Red Sox, 7 batted balls, 0 barrels, which is a 0 barrel percentage.
Wow. How does that work? Yeah. What a coincidence.
An average exit velocity of 76 miles per hour, a 30% strikeout percentage. Expected ERA of 0.56, which is top 1% of the league. This is over 3 innings, folks.
But and he wasn't even mentioned in our closer conversation. That feels like a mishap on our part.
Yeah, I mean, well, there's a lot of new faces. Look, I'll give us some leeway. There's a lot of new faces. But I think he's viable too. It's just weird. It's just weird that there are you know, guys who have never pitched in Major League Baseball, and then there are guys like Chase Anderson who are 36, I think.
Yeah.
Who are looking like viable options as well. So it's the whole pitching staff. I mean, it's been just surprise after surprise after surprise. And I think the ups and the downs included, you know, like to predict everything from, I guess like the one thing with the pitching staff this entire like off season spring training into the start of the season was like Sale getting traded. That was the only thing that we could be like, yeah, I saw that coming. Every single thing else has been shocking. So if 36-year-old Chase Anderson suddenly becomes your closer, I can't say that I'd be stunned. It's like, I expect the unexpected from the pitching staff now.
I still think my bold prediction of Weissert, Campbell, and Slayton being legitimate high-leverage relievers is looking pretty good right now.
I was thinking that every time I see Weissert, dude, every time I see that slider, I'm like, God damn, that's not a bad pick. He looks good.
Not a bad pick. People didn't want him on the roster.
When he gets a swing and miss, they look ugly.
Yeah.
Like, he makes batters look bad.
He's John Schreiber.
He kind of is Schreiber. God rest his soul.
No, he's just in Kansas City. He's not dead.
Well, what's the difference? Speaking of Liam Hendricks, because he came up a little bit. I did want to say Alex Speer had an article.
Obviously, he does that all the time. That's what you were going to bring to the table?
My point is Alex Speer, he wrote a bunch of words down, and you can go read
that
it.
That didn't even connect with Liam Hendricks. That was crazy.
He wrote an article with Liam Hendricks. Liam Hendricks didn't write it. He had a conversation with Liam Hendricks. Alex Speer wrote about it. It's on bostonglobe.com. It's probably on the actual print paper, too, if they still put that out. But he had, like, you know, obviously Liam has his, you know, opinions about Oakland, and he let them be known. It was a really good read. So I just wanted to say, go and check that out. The phrase that Hendricks used was, their owner is being rewarded for being inept. And I thought that was really good. Really good.
Like,
so it had me looking into the Coliseum a little bit more and saying my goodbyes, because look, we rag on it and all that, but it was actually a bucket list thing for me that I won't get to do. I wanted to go there. I wanted to try the food. I wanted to try to avoid getting salmonella, and that will not happen.
That's not necessarily true. You're not going to watch a Red Sox game there, but you got some months here if you want your lifelong dream to be accomplished.
I didn't say lifelong dream. I said a part of my bucket list. It's not the sole item on my bucket list. Here's the thing. I am not going to fly to Oakland and watch a game at the Coliseum. I'm just not going to do that. So I think it would have taken a lot too. It would have had to be like, I'm already there and the Red Sox are coming there. It was near the bottom of the bucket list. Really,
one
the
of
bottom.
Your many Oakland trips that you hope just overlapped.
Well, I don't think people realize the Bay Area is like three cities on top of each other, and apparently Sacramento is an hour away. But San Francisco, San Jose, and Oakland are like one big city. It's all right there. So I don't know if I ever found myself in San Francisco if I finally, you know, sell my app and you know, become a tech bro. Like that's
what
totally
again?
A possibility. It was called Fluffernutter.io.
Right.
And I don't want to
did what? You don't want to get into that?
I don't want to get into all the details. I think, you know, there's some of it is patented, but
okay, so then
let me just say,
talk about it then.
I don't think that's how that works. I don't know. I haven't been to San Fran yet, so I don't know all of the tech law.
Well, then we can bleep it. You could just tell me.
Well, let's just say all of the problems that you have with obtaining a Fluffernutter, consider those the past.
Okay. Yeah.
Well,
I mean,
not yet. Once the app gets picked up, then consider it the past.
Fluffernutter.io, you said.
That's it.
All right. In your Apple
I
store
have
yet, or?
No. We're kind of we're kind of focusing on oh damn, what is that? What is that one called? That would have been a good joke if I remember that. What is it called? What's the iPhone ripoff?
Android?
No.
Oh, I don't.
It's the Chinese phone that looks exactly like iPhone.
Oh, pardon me for not knowing that off the top of my head. I have no idea what you're talking about.
I think it's a kind of big deal. I don't know. Not big enough for either of us to know about it, but there's one. There is one. And man, if I remembered it, that joke would have killed. Apparently not, because you wouldn't have known it.
But no, I wouldn't have got it. But maybe someone at home. Maybe someone at home would have got a giggle. It wouldn't have been me. I don't know, man. I have friends that I talk to. I don't hear about, Apple ripoffs. I have stuff to do.
Oh my God. Sorry, I'm not rolling with a real iPhone over here. I'm actually sitting on an iPhone knockoff right now. I have two questions for you about the Oakland Athletics.
Okay, ask them one at a time.
All right. That's what I was going to do. What is the Boston Red Sox all-time record at the Oakland Coliseum?
Give me the games played? Or are we doing win percentage?
It's here. I'll give you the games played. Again, I looked this up on one site, and I tried to look it up on others. 993 games. That feels wrong.
93.
As I say that, right? There's no way.
Yeah, that feels like a lot for three games a year. That's so many years. Let's just.
There must have been a time where they played there more. Or this is.
I mean, that'd
wrong.
Be 331 seasons of three games a year.
There's no way they've played 1,000 games at the Oakland Coliseum.
And I can't even imagine, unless in the 1800s they were just shuffling back and forth.
I'm talking the Coliseum itself.
Oakland Coliseum, yeah. You're talking about the
Red
Sox.
There's no way
being
that
there.
Was around in the 1800s.
That's also a good point I hadn't even considered.
There's no way they played 1,000 games there in like 50 years.
No, that's a super wrong stat by you, no doubt about it.
Joe.
I mean, I feel like you're.
Well, let's find it out together then. This is a scavenger hunt now.
Okay, then I won't look it up so that you can.
Well, that makes a lot more sense because the one I had was really bad.
I feel like that'd be something you could find like Baseball Reference.
You would think. Dude, this also has Oakland Athletics against Boston Red Sox. This also has like 1,000 games.
Is that
That's not the Coliseum, though.
Right. Okay. So I think that's what you might have done.
Well, I don't know how I'm going to find this.
Because even still, what was it? 993, 939? What the hell was it?
993.
Say divided by six, that's still 165 and a half seasons.
Yeah. There's no way. There's no way they did that.
There's no chance.
The Coliseum is not, the shiniest pearl on the market, but it has not been around for 160 years. Build it during the Civil War.
Well, I mean, good question, Joe. I can't wait for the second one.
Yeah. Okay. That's, You know what's funny is that was supposed to be the one I had the answer to, and the other one I wasn't going to look up the answer, and I figured we could like figure it out together in real time, and that would be kind of fun. But okay. That kind of just proved that doesn't really
work.
Why is the Lowe's? Why is the A's logo an elephant?
That is something that I've always been perplexed by. I think maybe they just used to be like really fat and they were just like, we're going to be the elephants. Okay. And then the Athletics thing, maybe it was like a sarcastic thing because they were so big.
The origin of the elephant dates back to 1902 when John McGraw held a news conference after he was set to leave his position as manager of the Baltimore Orioles to take on the same role with the New York Giants. A reporter asked McGraw about his thoughts on the Philadelphia A's, who at the time had been making headlines as they bought up contracts of some of the top players in the National League, such as Hall of Fame pitcher Rube Waddell and outfielder Topsy Hartzell. Unenthused by the question, Topsy's a great name, by the way. Unenthused by the question, McGraw responded, "The Philadelphia club will make no money. They have a big white elephant on their hands." That diss by McGraw got back to then A's owner Connie Mack, who amused the comment so much that he made a white elephant the team's unofficial mascot as sort of a rallying cry. 3 years later, when the A's and Giants squared off in the 1905 World Series, Mack carried on the playful back and forth by representing McGraw with a white elephant statue before game one. Or presenting, not representing him. So that's it. They were just like, man, they got some terrible contracts over there. And they were like, that's our mascot now. And that's it.
That does make sense. I mean, just bad management being their mascot.
It is really funny. Yeah, bad management, bad ownership from 120 years ago. And they were like, that's us, baby. Put it on
the
cap.
That's us forever. We're going to be bad at this for a long time, so you might as well put it on there.
That's fucking right. That's A's baseball, baby. Yeah, we got some bad contracts. You know it. Time to get to series MVP, do you think? Are we there already? Are we flying?
Yeah, I feel like we didn't really talk about extras, but also like what? The only thing I'll say about the offense is two hitter pitcher friendly ballpark. So let's not freak out yet. Let's see what happens when they get to Fenway and they got that big wall out there.
Yeah. I mean, not a lot of balls hit in the air that far, but yeah.
Not yet. But not yet. Once you get into that cold April air in Boston, the ball's going to be flying. That's what they always
say. Everybody knows. They love it. I'm sitting right now by a window not far from Boston, Massachusetts. And it's a blizzard. It's a blizzard.
Yeah. My window is not, way closer than yours. Not to brag. Way closer. And it's a little snowy. I would say significantly.
Can you see the Citgo sign?
Pretty much. I can see the Citgo gas station.
Can you really? That'd be kind of cool.
I don't know. Hold on.
Talk about all the free advertising that Citgo has got. I mean, it's probably not free. They probably pay a lot of money to keep that sign there.
Yeah, I don't think they just like, we're like, hey, we're going to put this here. Are you cool with that? Yeah. I don't know. There is a gas station right there. I don't know what company it is.
As a Sox fan, are you more likely to stop at a Citgo gas station? Are you like, oh, hell yeah, that's us?
Again, dude, I don't use those.
Oh, right.
Not trying to be a dick here, but my car drives itself, you know.
Right. Bought a Tesla.
iPhone still has the button on it, but I have a self-driving car.
Why? What?
I like the button. Everybody gets mad at me for this. I'll, you know, get a table at a club and they'll be like, how do you have that? These two things don't align. And I'm like, yeah, I know. It's not good. It's like, I can't afford the 15. I just like the button. All right. Leave me alone. It's also cracked.
Button life is so far behind. Was that an iPhone 5? 6?
No. It's an SE. They make it for people like me who can't adapt to the times. It's not that old.
Is that not the version that like you get for your grandfather?
It is the version I got for both of my parents. You're not wrong, but
there we go.
I like the button. I'll switch eventually because this is getting, at this point it's cracked. It's maybe 4 years old, probably more. And there's three like SEs and I have the first one. Like, so it's old. The battery is not at its peak capacity. I think it is draining significantly faster.
Stop at a Citgo gas station to get a new phone. You ever think like, man, I'm more likely to stop here to get a prepaid card for my burner iPhone?
That's not. It works just fine. It's
okay. All right.
Phone's fine. Don't worry about my phone. What about your phone?
The number that I've seen twice now for Red Sox on the road against Oakland is 489 and 504. Just like a 490 something winning percentage. It's under 500, which is crazy.
Right. But again, total games can't be paused. Someone explain that to me.
It must include like when they were Philadelphia, and
That would make more sense. Like an original six Phillies or whatever it was. Original six is not that right sport. That's but, hockey. I know. Yeah. But yeah, whatever. It was around the same amount of teams. And they probably played Philly every other day because it was like four teams.
I mean, at the very beginning, you know what always gets me is, you know, when people talk about like the Reds being the first Major League Baseball team. I'm like, how at any time was there one team?
Yeah, you can have two.
Yeah, there should be two original teams. I don't understand maybe how like, the Reds are like, we were first. Like, who were you playing then? How were you a professional team? Who were you, maybe they're who like, were you playing?
Maybe they filed their like LLC like a week before the Red Sox and Yankees. And so like they were technically the first team. But like they couldn't have played a game before anybody else. That's certainly not possible.
Yeah, I mean, unless they were, I don't know, playing the fire department. There's just no way. There's just no way.
Maybe that's what they did.
I do know that that's why the uniforms are wool. In case anybody out there cares about baseball history. I'm sure people listening care about baseball. If anyone cares about the early history of the game, which I really do, I really, really like early baseball. They wear wool because the first organized games were played between fire departments. And that's like what they wore under their whatever. And then they had like, you know, crests on the front of their fire department. And then that's kind of evolved into teams putting logos on their chest and then all major sports adopting that. So that's kind of fun. That's kind of fun, huh? Check that out. Didn't think you were going to learn something today, did you? Series MVP. I don't know if we have the same guy, but I think we probably should have the same guy. If you want a second to look it up, go right ahead. But I'll tell you.
I have two people, but I have a clear favorite. But I think there's two people you could give it to.
I'm going Jaron Duran.
Yeah, okay, that was mine as well.
Yeah, Jaron went 9 for 12. That's a 750 average. Yeah, two walks good. Makes it a 786 on base percentage, a 1536 OPS. What a year. Two RBI. Were they all singles? Yes.
100%, yeah.
But did he also steal three bags?
No.
No, he stole four.
Yeah, there you go. Was that intentional? Boom. Or did you just...
Yeah.
All right. There you go.
How about that?
Liked it.
Still four bags. Plain and simple. It's got to be Jaron. You have Jaron too?
I did. Yeah. I think the only other one you could consider is Trevor Story because it was Jaron, but Trevor Story, I mean, he had four hits, but three of them were doubles and he had the most RBIs with four. He also had two walks. So I thought what he did was pretty impactful as well. He also, I think, had better, you know, more high leverage opportunities that he came out on top of. But Jaron Duran got nine hits and 12 at bats. So
right,
you got it.
And also, like, I think Trevor had struggled in the Seattle series. He had, I think, three singles. So just seeing him get an extra base hit in general and getting going, like, that means something too. Honorable mention. Mr. Trevor Story. But yeah, I mean, that'll do it for the Oakland series. Unless you got something else.
No, not a thing. So I guess you just like.
Call it a show. Clear our thoughts, clear the bases.
No, I was thinking. Maybe we do like the pigeon preview.
Okay, folks. I'm trying to. I didn't have it ready at all.
You were vaping.
Leave it in. Okay, folks. The Red Sox play in Anaheim against a team that doesn't have the word Anaheim in their name. Game one is going to be Cutter Crawford versus Griffin Canning. Cutter toes the slab in this historic meeting of two of the most lacrosse names in baseball. Cutter is responsible for the sole walk the rotation gave up its first time through, so obviously some correcting needing to be done after Crawford's scoreless six-inning season debut with seven Ks. Griffin Canning, God bless his soul, gave up five runs to the O's in as many innings. That's a 9 ERA to start the year, Scott. Room for improvement. That's very big for us. Game two is going to be Garrett Whitlock versus Reed Detmers. Garrett Whitlock struck out 8 in his first 5 innings of work this year, allowing just 3 hits and no walks, which is partly the Andrew Bailey effect, partly that he ranked in the 98th percentile in walk percentage last year. If you want to talk Andrew Bailey, though, Whitlock threw just 23 sinkers in his last start, making up about 28% of his pitches thrown that day, taking a plummet from the 52.5% that he threw it last year. Reed Detmers is taking quite the opposite approach this year, it seems, throwing over 60 four-seam fastballs. Over 60% four-seam fastballs in his first start of the year. What an idiot. Batters had a 505 slug against it last year. Keep on tossing it, Reed. And game 3 is going to be Tanner Houck versus Chase Silseth. Houck did see the top of the A's order a third time in his last start, which was a big deal for him last year, facing the 1-2-3 hitters for a third time the other day. Houck went strikeout, single, strikeout, and Chase Silseth is a parcel mouth from New Mexico. Loves walking, guys. Loves hard contact. One thing you got to know about him, this dude sucks. And that is going to do it for your pitching preview. Scott, do you have any predictions for this series outside of the record? Because we'll do the. I think we should do a prediction on what we think the outcomes of the games are. Any predictions just outside of that? Maybe outside of the game itself. Anything you're feeling in your gut?
I was gonna say I think the offense might come alive a little bit against this rotation. Outside of the game itself, I think the boys are gonna have a good time. Get a good meal probably. I have a feeling they're going to dance before a game if I had to pick.
Do we like that?
Yeah, it's working. We're 5-2. We're in second place. Second place Boston Red Sox. People don't talk about that nearly enough. They like to talk about the last place Boston Red Sox done, but we don't talk at all about the second place team because we're 5-7 games in, whatever. Counts.
I mean, they go 500 the rest of the way. They go one game over 500 because it's an odd number left. They finished with 84 wins.
John Henry was right.
All right, clip it. Clip that. The dancing thing, I like it. I like it. I like that they're it does kind of feel like an us against the world thing. And the monster thing is the same kind of deal. I don't know how I feel about the monster thing. It's a little, it depends who's doing it.
I don't know what it means. I don't care for it. I'll say that. I think they could do better than that.
The thing is, it's Trevor was it has something to do with monsters, but we can't tell you more than that. It's what else could it, what could possibly be beyond it being a monster that do you guys are monsters that you guys are is it Frankenstein? It's alive. We're back from the dead. Kind of it can only be so many things. You know what I mean? I don't know. You can't be I'm not going to tell you what fruit I just got at the store, but it's yellow. And it grows in bunches. So,
that's all I can say. They do have seemingly a lot of innuendos in their celebrations. That seems to be a trend. But, hey, man, whatever keeps you 500,
That's what we always say. Whatever keeps you 500. I think, looking through the pitching matchups, it's hard to say they lose any of these games. But I think it happens. I think they lose one. I think they go 2-3. I think we come back here to a 7-3 Red Sox team.
Do you think we get our first bad start?
That's a good question. And I think we do. And I think it's game 2 or 3. And that's Whitlock or Houck.
I think it's just statistically it just seems like likely.
Exactly. It's if it's going to happen to anybody, it's going to be the bottom of your rotation. Nothing against those guys in particular. It's just it's bound to happen at some point.
I feel like the one good thing about Whitlock and Houck is that there's actually a sizable change. I feel like in years past, it's Whitlock had a good game today. And you can't really point to, you can really get into the weeds of what happened differently, but there wasn't a notable, you can point to, this is happening now. Now we're saying screw the four seam. Whitlock has made major adjustments to his slider as he seems to do every other start. That's the one. I feel like every game we go into, I'll feel good. I just feel how many rotations have gone 10 games, 11 games, just perfect, basically. You know, I feel like we're due for a clunker. That's the only reason I feel that way. It's nothing about the, it's certainly not the A's or Angels lineup that scares me or anything like that. It's just how far can we take this along before somebody says, maybe Andrew Bailey isn't Jesus. He's just really good at this. Like, because right now, I've never seen a positional coach get more credit in my entire life than Andrew Bailey, especially in baseball. And I do think what he's doing is really good. It just, I don't think, I mean, the Giants weren't the best team in baseball last year.
Right. He didn't entirely overhaul like the record of the team. Yeah. But like, there is something to what you're saying, that there's a notable change in like pitch mix, in delivery and all that stuff.
Even pitch shape.
Yeah. Grips, all that, like all, like there's mechanical differences, to what's going on. So, it's not just luck, but the flip side, to be a pessimist, is you are updating the scouting report on yourself. So
yeah,
like, yes, you come in with an entirely different pitch mix than you had last year and, you know, an entirely different look to a lot of your pitches than you did last year. Yeah. It's going to catch people off guard. Like, but as you do it more, teams can prepare for you. So another reason why I think it's kind of bound to happen. I hope it doesn't. I'm not sitting here saying that, like, you know, they stink, whatever. But yeah, it's just like you said, it's a statistical thing. It's got to happen at some point. Speaking of the Angels lineup, you brought them up. Oh, what do you think? Do you think record-wise, what do you think what do they do here?
I'll take... I'm going to sweep. No, I just, I'm going to, yeah. It feels like a 2-for-3 situation, but I'm just going to, just because every matchup I like. So that's why I'm going to go sweep. Like, there's no like, oh, game 2, I'm scared, you know?
Yeah.
So screw it. Let's just keep winning.
I'm all for it. It's totally possible. I think it's totally possible that they take all 3 of these games. But you brought up the Angels lineup, and I think it's worth bringing up, because I actually don't know the answer here. The whole let's give Anthony Rendon a standing ovation thing, is that real?
I saw it as well, and I understand the premise and that's going to be a thing after Trey Turner, but this doesn't feel like the right guy, because he's not saying, man, I'm really trying here, and it's just not going well. He just said, I got paid. I don't really like baseball. I think a standing ovation would be like, oh, my God, you guys just shut up. I'm trying to, like, I'm not even trying to hit. I'm just, would you stop annoying me? Like, he doesn't seem like the right guy to do that to.
And not the right way to do it, because before it was like a guy, a Philly fan, I think he might have been a radio host, who was like, hey, like, let's stop ragging on this guy, everybody. Like, hey, let's all get together and maybe we can turn his season around by just believing in him. For the team, I think it was the team to put out like a press release, like a flyer. It's like, come on, guys, let's all get on our feet for Rendon. Let's go, Anthony. That is not nice. Do it.
It's not. That's also humiliating for the player. Like, last one kind of happened organically, but for the team to be like, hey, we're going to need to do something because this guy sucks right now. So let's give him a standing. Like, we're actively trying to fix this guy. He's so bad. Like, he needs more.
It's also like he's so hated. It's like, hey, let's remind him that maybe we don't hate him. Like, that's.
But they do when they should.
They do when they should. They do when they should. Ugh. Sox win this series. Now, we should have a conversation about call your shot. We talked a little bit off air if we want to do call your shot or not. Part of the reason is that we don't have a bet in place for like what this is all for. 2, we found a loophole to gaseous endeavors back and back. And here's the thing. I would probably do that. The other thing is that like people do that segment and I want people to tune into ITM to hear ITM and for it to be its own thing, and I hope that there's a flavor here that you only get here. And if people are already doing that segment elsewhere, maybe we just graciously hand off the baton and say, hey, go ahead and call your shot. Maybe our shot is taking a step back away from it. I don't know. I want to get the people's feel on it. So let's abstain this week if you're cool with that, and then
okay,
we'll get people's thoughts. But there's certain things you close the book on. Maybe Call Your Shot doesn't make the cut this year. Jam-packed show this year. Jam-packed.
There's so many segments. We lost segments. That in the weather segment, and we changed the name of a different segment. So you're getting even just as much. You're losing two.
You're losing two. We didn't
add anything new. But
yeah,
we'll just talk longer on the other stuff. That's always good.
That's honestly what's happening is that, yeah. we have two hosts now who don't mind, doing an hour on the Coliseum minutes.
Yeah, just making the just consistently bad and long content. That's never been a problem for
us. That's us, baby. Tune on in. We'll be back Sunday. But we actually do have a segment that you guys have known and loved for years. Empty in your brain of thoughts with Joey and Scott. Do you have you got any brain?
I would just say that I don't know if this fits perfectly any brain. I just looked it up, and the Giants were 11th last year with a 4.02 ERA. So I'd take that if that's all what happens when you just remove your four seam.
Would take that. They also they had like a weird rotation where like they used their bullpen like seven innings a game.
So, yeah, they were doing like two openers a week. Which who would have done that last year?
Can you imagine just two TBD starts?
Every week
it would be ugly. I got one. I don't know which order to do these in because I have a closing thought and I have an empty in my brain of thoughts.
And you're kind of thinking like they're kind of interchangeable.
That's not what I'm thinking.
It kind of seems like you're saying, I don't know. Well, you're saying I have two thoughts. I don't have a clear designation for each one because they might be able to fit in both.
You know what? I should have a clear designation. One is obviously a lot more important than the other. So I got fish this past week. I don't know if I've ever brought this up on this show. I've brought it up in the past on other, like I've done like guest spots and I've told this story. But I got glowfish in October of 2022. And I was like amped to get these fish for a long time. And I got them. And then the next morning I woke up and they were all dead. Every one of them, belly up. And that morning I got a call or I got a text from my boss at Odyssey who was like, hey, do you got a minute? Like, want to hop on a Zoom? And I got on and she's like, how you doing? And I was like, oh, you know, funny story. I bought a bunch of fish yesterday and they all died. So it kind of feels like that's a bad omen. And she didn't laugh. And she was like, Joey, I'm sorry. The purpose of this call is that, we're making changes over here. And unfortunately, that means blah, 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 blah. So I got let go that morning. And then had to just like clean a bunch of dead fish out of my tank. So I waited a long time to get these fish, to get glowfish. My son is older now. And he was really excited about these fish. And I went and I got the water tested. Right. I ran the filter for 2 weeks. They say to do it for 1 week. I did it for 2 weeks. Right. Then they say to float the fish and acclimate them to the water for 25 minutes. Guess how long I did it?
I hope just 25 minutes because I feel like 35 minutes. OK, well, I don't know if that's better, but OK.
I think it did. I don't know. I hope so. Well, I mean, spoiler alert, it didn't.
You're going off track. I feel like that's why you keep killing these things. So you get doctor's orders and you're just doing your own thing. Take two Advil. You're taking four. Go ahead. Finish your story.
The fish all died.
Yeah.
Fish are all dead. And one, to me, that means there's a major tragedy about to strike my life. So I am on edge, to say the least. I am shaking in fear. But also, my son is older and he's like, he was like, Daddy, where's the fish? I was like, oh, they got to be sleeping in there. I don't have the heart to tell them that I killed fish. So if anybody, this is a public service question. That's not a phrase.
Yeah.
It's just a question to you guys. If anybody has the secret to Glowfish, for the love of God, please help me. I have a sweet little baby boy who really loves his fish, and he does not know that they are dead. So that's that. RIP to them. Do you have any other, do you have a closing thought before I make the transition that I don't want to make from that to my real closing thought?
Yeah. So my only closing thought was, to remind you about the fish story that you were supposed to tell. So you're welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm one episode later than anticipated, but if you listen to the end of the show, you could see why I was a little distracted last episode as, I became a robot that was cutting in and out constantly. And I just forgot about the fish story that I was supposed to remind you of.
Just brutal. This one went better. This one went a lot better. I think we might have to switch up our format. That's why it's late, by the way. This episode is late, definitely because we were having tech issues for no other reason. It was tech issues. And by tech issues, I mean Scott tech issues. So thanks a lot to Scott for finally figuring it out.
Nope, that's not going to go on me.
Figuring it out for
that's
now.
It was a Joey delay, and I will not stand for that. 100% Joey.
I got a closing thought.
Okay.
Red Sox lost a very important figure this week. Larry Lucchino passed away. For those who might be too young to remember, when this ownership group came along and bought the Boston Red Sox, people hated it. People hated it. And they thought they were going to make the team worse. And they, you know, they had some promise. You know, Mo Vaughn had been Mo Vaughn. They had this kid, Nomar. Pedro, I think Pedro was already here. I think Pedro was already here. I might be wrong there. I was 3 years old. Give me a break. Larry Lucchino is really the sole reason that Fenway Park not only stands today, but is what it is. And I was talking to my dad, and I was talking to some other media people. I was talking to Gary Tange, if you guys know him, about Fenway back in the day. And Gary said he is stunned to this day that they were able to turn Fenway into an attraction, which is very weird to think about now, because Fenway is Fenway. It's historic. It's America's most beloved ballpark. It wasn't. It was a dump. And there was a huge movement to move it to, what were people talking about, like the Seaport? I don't even think it had the name, the Seaport at the time.
Yeah, I don't know.
But yeah. People talked about moving it over to the coast, closer to downtown, domed stadium, all this stuff. And there was obviously an outside force in like the Save Fenway movement and whatever. But Larry Lucchino led the charge to save Fenway and also maintain its historic elements and all the things that make Fenway great. So if and when you find yourself at Fenway this upcoming season, which I will. I'll be at opening day. Scott won't. just give a little thanks to Larry. Larry's the reason that place is there. Larry did a bunch of other things. In case you don't know, again, Larry Lucchino, I think for a lot of people, especially the younger listeners, I think Larry's just a name that like you're supposed to know. And you're like, oh yeah, Larry. Yeah. You're part of the group, right? But he used to be more involved. Now he's not involved. Like, yeah, I know. Yeah, big part in all this, blah, blah, blah. He brought along Theo Epstein over here. He brought him over from San Diego. He was his mentor and really gave Theo a shot, which I don't need to tell you worked out. He also is the father of the name The Evil Empire. Gave that nickname to the New York Yankees. Which George Steinbrenner hated, absolutely hated it. He butt heads with Lucchino pretty bad over it. He did not like it. But the fact that Larry Lucchino, who was an outside guy, I think he was from Baltimore, came in, was like, we're not moving. We're saving this ballpark. We're going to make it nice. You're going to want to come here. We're putting seats on the fucking monster is what we're doing. And we're taking down the, get ready for this, I just came up with this, you guys, Evil Empire. How do you like that? We're the good guys. They're the bad guys. And we're going to take them down finally. And then did it. Larry Lucchino was instrumental in all of that, a huge part of turning my childhood into a fun one. And honestly, re-steering the course of my career. I mean, if 04 doesn't happen, I'm not doing this. This is 20 years later that I'm living off the high that I got in 2004. So we'll be missed, Larry. Thank you to Larry. Boston lost a legend. I think that's all my Larry thoughts. Do you have what's your favorite time that you hung out with Larry?
It's hard to choose all the time.
You guys are tight.
So I'm not going to pick one. I will say one of my good friends, Tim Burke, was a Jimmy Fun kid and growing up, and he's been always really good to him. Tim ended up working for the Blue Sox a couple of years ago, and so he kind of maintained that relationship, I feel like, a little bit. So, I mean, that was most probably personal connection I had there, and that's really all I cared about.
I know a handful of folks who work for the Woo Sox in different areas, you know, social and photography and the media people mainly. Nothing but great things to say about their interactions with Larry Lucchino. So, RIP Larry. Thank you for everything. That is my closing thought. Unless you got something else, I think that'll probably do it.
Yeah, I had one. Just feels wrong now.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Should I? I asked you to go first.
Yeah, well, I didn't know you were doing that. I mean, I normally will defer. I didn't know that we were going to change the whole vibe there. And between, I mean, that and the dead fish, I was gonna say that we never mentioned that we still have merch, but that just feels wrong to bring up at this time.
Oh, no. You know what? In the spirit of Larry, listen, in Dan Shaughnessy's book, he talks about Larry Lucchino coming into the clubhouse. I think it was the club, wherever. It was like right before the 04 parade. And he was like yelling at Tito that everybody had to wear these new sweatshirts. They just got these new sweatshirts. We're going to sell these new sweatshirts. Everybody wear them. And Tito like really hated it. And Larry pushed. He's like, we're selling these things. I mean, he was business first. He's a businessman. So no, I think Larry would love that we're sitting here saying, RIP Larry, go buy our merch. It's still on. It's in our link tree. It's in our bio.
Yeah.
Yep. So follow the show at @ITM_pod. On Instagram and on Twitter. Follow me at Joey Capone. You can follow. Is it Joey Capone? Yeah. Yeah. That's my name. At Joey Capone. You can follow Scott at Scott Neville 47, right? Jacoby Ellsbury. Is that what it was?
Well, yeah, it is Jacoby Ellsbury, but Jacoby Ellsbury is number 46. So.
Yep. Yep. So
that's not what you said.
Nope. At Scott Neville 46. We will be back after this thrilling Los Angeles, California, Angels of Anaheim at California series. For Scott Neville, I'm Joey Capone. Go Sox, kid.